thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Team.
Yes, you are listening to the Urban Sports Team. We are back and live. I'm by myself. It's Wally, you haven't known. If you haven't been listening to the show, if you're new to the show, my name is Wally. I'm the lead host of the Urban Sports Scene. It's a pleasure to bring sports to you all. It's been a great week for myself, man. I had some excellent news recently. It looks like I'll be part and be a, not a co-host, but part of the sports talk show in Richmond, near Richmond, Virginia. So the commute may be real. I plan on being on the show June 8th. I'll give you more information on the show. But again, you listen to the Urban Sports Scene. That's, like I said, and my name is Wally Way, and my homeboy Will, who usually co-hosts the show with me. Again, our phone lines are open. If you want to call in and discuss any topic, the number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904 again. But I'm stoked. I'm excited. It's been a struggle. I mean, not a struggle, but it's actually been a long process, a hard grinding process. But to get the opportunity to be on a sports show is kind of it's great. Something I was aiming for, and it's been a blessing. The plan is always to bring the homies with me, so that's the goal. But just to be in that situation where you get an opportunity to get your name out there, you know, pat your resume, be able to, you know, talk about sports, talk about something I love to talk about. It's a unbelievable blessing. But again, I'm waiting on my boy Will, late as always. I'm saying that out of love, not ragging on my homie. But let's get into our tradition, which we usually call this our tradition. It's called the pregame. There's rumors out there that Santana Moss and the Redskins, we part in ways. Santana Moss is a free agent. The Redskins looks like they won't re-sign him. And it's sad. It's bittersweet to me. Obviously, it's time to go to a new direction. We have younger wide receivers, Ryan Grant. You have obviously DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, and some other young and up and coming wide receivers. Young wide receivers for the Washington Redskins. But Santana Moss has been a favorite of mine for over, you know, since he's been in D.C. That's a guy that is a stand up guy in the media. He never makes excuses. Win or lose, he's always out there in the media talking, explaining what's going on with the team and what's going on with him. He's not a guy who shies away from confrontation. I mean, look at it. We got him from the Jets, and in that trade, Joe Gibson brought him over here, and the production he did have, the production he had with the Washington Redskins in year one was unbelievable. Obviously, I posed this question on our Facebook page. What memory do you have of Santana? My man Kenny, big ups to Kenny, stated that the 2-touchdown game against the Dallas Cowboys on Monday night. And I think anybody, you know, who's a diehard Redskins fan remembers that game. That game was special. Santana looked like we were going to lose. I remember that game like it was yesterday. I thought we were going to lose that game. I turned my TV off and then, like, you know, it was late. Turned the TV off like 2 minutes, pissed off. I thought we had this game. And we were competitive. And all of a sudden the Cowboys pulled away and, you know, boom, one touchdown. And I just changed the channel. Like, we ain't going to get this. And you see another bomb, Mark Brunell throw another bomb to Santana Moss. And just that season alone was something special. Santana had like probably over 1,400 yards, I believe. And his average yards of catch was crazy. I mean, he would take a screen pass to the house. To be honest with you, Santana Moss was he was DeSean Jackson before DeSean Jackson came to D.C. Last season. If you think about it, Santana Moss was that shortish wide receiver who made big plays down the field consistently. And oh my God, the yards after the catch was something amazing, something trill. If you look at Santana Moss's stats, even, you know, as a Washington Redskin wide receiver, with his, you know, doing his tenure, I mean, third in receptions, fourth in yardage, seventh in touchdowns. Santana Moss did it all for the Washington Redskins. I'm like, again, when I was looking up his stats, I was like, wow, he's up there. And you think about the great Washington wide receivers we've had for this team: Art Monk, Ricky Sanders, Gary Clark, Mitchell. There's a lot of individuals out here for this team.
Michael Westbrook.
Yeah, I'm not going to mention Michael Westbrook. That's Will T. He's in the building finally. What's up, Will T?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm good. I'm blessed. How's your foot?
It's a little better.
That's good.
Had to get something to eat. Would have been a short show if I didn't.
I understand. But again,
continue on.
Yeah, Santana. it's a guy that I've actually, you know, it's gonna be bittersweet for me again to lose a guy like that. Again, I understand the movement. We got to get younger, but that's a guy to me that was just, you know, he was a professional. He took his job seriously. And again, when we brought him, I'm gonna say it again, we brought him into DC. I call it part of the Miami, the U movement. When we brought him to DC, there are a lot of folks out there that didn't think so highly of the signing. But when he got here, again, I'm gonna say it again, he was Deshaun Jackson before Deshaun Jackson got to DC.
I'm not gonna say didn't think highly of the signing. I don't think people liked the price.
Yeah, but I mean, he was definitely for year one. I mean, to me, in the grand scheme of things, he was definitely worth the price of admission. I mean, even his career. But that first year was like, wow, we got over. Like this first year was like his first year is one of the more explosive wide receivers in football. Probably, if you know, minus for his size, like a Steve Smith, he's probably definitely one of the more explosive wide receivers in football. So Santana Moss is a guy that will be missed. Obviously, you're going to be in the Redskins Hall of Fame, a Ring of Honor too for the Washington Redskins. So,
oh, he should be.
Yeah, and deservedly so. So do you think I know you turned wings up. Do you want to talk or you want to eat wings? And wings look good. I ain't going to lie. What kind of wings are those? Go ahead, man. Take
a shot. Put me on blast.
They can't see you. It's not. You're not on camera. So don't worry about it. If you was on camera, you'd be on blast. It'd be that bad.
From a local grocery store, I give no free publicity because I get nothing for free. Yeah.
For real?
Yeah. Wings? I'll tell you offline.
Of course. Oh, man. I got to tell you some the good news, too. I've already told our listening audience. My boy Lil Watt put me on, basically got me hooked up to somebody else. I'm going to be on a sports show, talk show.
Who? Talk show. You?
Mm-hmm.
That's what's up, man.
Yeah, so but it's going to be, it's in Richmond.
So you're going to travel to Richmond?
Well, I'm going to do once a week. And I could do it on the phone.
So, okay.
So the goal is, you know, like this is the goal. I was talking with rapping to do. Like the goal is, you know, hopefully if things, because, you know, he's already got their team. The goal is, you know, for me personally, is the trying to get a show, and then I can actually get everybody I want to be on my show.
Worldwide Wally.
No, you know who I'm trying to get on my show. I'm trying to have my own team for my show.
Feel you. I just mean
Worldwide
Wally. Nah, you're doing big things.
I'm trying to do big things for the team. Not for Wally, for the team. That's how, you know how I always think about it, it's the team. Not for Wally, for the team.
I feel you.
You know what I'm saying?
But I'm going to continue to, you know.
Oh, we're still doing a show. You know that, right?
No, I mean, no. I'm a, you know, split my time between the microphone and my wings.
Right now it's Worldwide Will on the wings. No, Worldwide Wings. Mm-hmm. Is that better? Worldwide
mm-hmm.
Wings?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds good, man. Keep splitting that time, man. You got the juice now, man. You make the wings look good, man. You're making me hungry. I'm going to the gym after this, though, man. I exercise or die.
All right. Respect that.
Anyway, down to pregame. Roger Goodell, due to Deflategate, suspended Tom Brady. New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady for four games, and the Patriots also lose a first round pick in the 2016 draft and a fourth round pick in the 2017 draft.
And a million dollars,
yeah.
Robert Kraft, he came out and made a statement today saying that no longer would he protest this ruling. He made a very valid point, which I've been saying all along. It's been 4 months since the AFC Championship game, we're still talking about PSI, Deflategate, things of that nature. So, kudos to Robert Kraft for just sucking it up and taking it like a man. You know, a lot of people are going to dispute what's in the Wells report. Me personally, I just think this whole Deflategate thing has been blown out of proportion. ESPN has been leading with it all last week, which is stupid to me.
What she means out of proportion?
I mean, I think the story has been blown out of proportion. You know, anytime it's on CNN and MSNBC, ABC Nightly News, CBC, CNBC Nightly News, and Fox Nightly News, I think it's gone to another, it's reached another
level. I know what you're saying.
It's not just a sports hot topic. Mm-hmm. It's something that's popular culture. So I'm glad that Robert Kraft is, you know, trying to put from his side of things, trying to just let it go forward, and now we still have to get into the Tom Brady hearing and everything. So we still have a ways to go with this whole Deflategate thing, especially when the hearing with the arbitrator, or if Roger Goodell recuses himself, if that's, you know, whenever that's heard.
Yeah, I doubt that's gonna happen. In terms of, I don't think, like, I'm glad he decided to pretty much, you know, stop his, you know, complaining or campaigning. I'm glad he did that, because obviously they had like a meeting with the owners, whatnot. So I'm sure the owners had the other owners had something to say, and that's the reason why they came to a conclusion, and they decided, okay, this is not good for business to have this situation, this strife with the commissioner, knowing he works for them. But I will say this: I feel like the Patriots are delusional if they don't think that Spygate has anything to play a part in this. I mean, you look at the organization now as an organization likes to push the envelope. You look at the Ravens game, though it was legal, but a lot of people look at them like, wow, they're willing to push it to that extent to win a game. Or you have, like, obviously Spygate.
When you reference the Ravens game, what are you talking about?
I'm referring to the eligible linemen in that playoff game, which no one ever.
Okay, I'm just saying that because, you know, certain people might not remember.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, the eligible linemen, which they used, like, they basically used a line. They made the running back, ineligible. Right? They made the running back ineligible.
Yeah, they kept
the lineman, and the lineman was eligible, right? Am I correct?
Right, correct.
So a lot of folks, when you look at that organization, you're thinking like, wow, they'll do anything it takes to win. And granted, it was legal, but you know, just like in baseball where there's an unwritten rule kind of thing, same thing in that regard in football. So you play with the rule. Again, you do by any means necessary to win a game. I believe in winning. I'm not going to lie. I believe in winning by any means necessary. But when you got to look at it through the spectrum of the public, they look at you and it's like, okay, this Patriot organization is about cheating. And it definitely stems back from Spygate. People thought that Spygate that they weren't penalized hard enough. So that does play a part now.
Let me cut you off there. With Spygate, it wasn't necessarily cheating because there wasn't a rule that forbid that. But what's being alleged now is definitely cheating because allegedly the balls were measured by the referee and then the two attendees went and deflated the air on the command of Tom Brady. So I'll say yes, this is cheating. Spygate, not necessarily. But excuse me, wings are great. But you have to look at it from this perspective. If everyone else is doing it, is it necessarily cheating? And this is, you know, it's been on the record that a lot of quarterbacks do certain things to doctor the ball to their liking.
Yeah, basically, the Patriots, like, again, it goes back to the Patriots. Everybody deemed Spygate, players and even players, current players, whatever, felt that what they were doing was wrong, put it that way. So they looked at it as an organization that's willing to push the envelope and not listen to the NFL. They're willing to do what they want to do. So I think that's what Robert Kraft, before he came out and said what he said, had to understand. Like, your organization is viewed that way. It's the same thing when you're viewing players that may have not really broken the law for real, but now they're under investigation. So now the NFL is taking action, say, okay, well, we're just going to punish you before the court system comes up with a ruling. Like Pac-Man Jones years ago. Pac-Man Jones wasn't guilty at the time. They already punished him. They punished him off of what the image and what the public, what public perception of Pac-Man, of that incident was in terms of Pac-Man and Pac-Man Jones. Same thing applies here with the Patriots. I'm not saying the Patriots did anything like criminal, but I'm saying at the same time within public opinion, because where they put themselves in every situation, they put themselves in quote unquote cheating or whatever situation. And that's why, in my regard, and that's why I think, you know, that's why they got punished. If the Patriots, if the New York Jets did the same thing, no background of cheating or no background of being perceived as cheaters, they wouldn't have got suspended. Nope, they wouldn't have had this penalty.
Yeah, I do agree with you that Spygate does play into it. But also, I think people aren't putting enough weight on this being like an integrity of the game issue, which is to me, even though, you know, protecting the shield and off the field, the image of the league is important. But when it comes to integrity of the game, there's no way we can really quantify how having a ball that's underinflated, you know, can change the outcome of the game.
No, I agree. I think, again, And that's the main thing for Roger Goodell. We hear him talk about it all the time, the integrity of the game. And Robert Kraft should understand that more than anything, anybody, because, you know, supposedly Roger Goodell are boys. He should understand where he was coming from throughout the whole time. So to me, his like, oh, my God, I can't believe this happened and this, that, and the other. It's amazing. Now, do I think Tom Brady's getting all four games? He's going to get suspended for four games? No, I think he'll get suspended for two games. It'll be cut in half. Because it should be told in the grand scheme of things. It's really a small thing to me. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I don't look at it as a penalty that's worth four games. But I am glad he's getting suspended. And well, it's Tom Brady's fault. I'm sorry. Well, you wanted to say something? Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'll interject afterwards.
Okay. To me, it's Tom Brady's fault because he was so smug about it. If he was, you know, a little bit upfront, a little more humble with it, he wouldn't have got suspended.
Well, I'll say this. I don't think his smugness or anything that has to do with it. If he gave orders for the code red, you know, all my movie fans.
No, folks, a lot of folks were saying that, using that reference.
Yeah, I mean, it's my movie fans. Yeah, my good. Movie fans know that.
Well, let the folks know what movie you're referring to.
A Few Good Men. If he ordered the code red, then I think the four games is justified because if he had any knowledge of what was going on, then I think four games is justified because it compromises the spirit of competition. It gives you an unwarranted advantage because if the referees measure the ball pregame and then you have your guys go in and take air out of the ball and you know about it, then I think four games suspension is justified.
I mean, you ain't gonna hear me dispute it any which way. Not the biggest Tom Brady fan at all, but again, I can just see him the way. If you look at Roger Goodell's track record when it comes to these kind of suspensions and the appeal process, to me, two games he'll probably get I think Tom Brady will get two games.
Absolutely, I think he'll get two games too.
I think he'll split in half. He'll get two games, but I do agree with you. If Tom Brady went against the rule and decided, okay, well, I'm gonna change the inflation or deflation of the ball, whatever, because I wanted to. That shows you that he thinks he's bigger than the league and he can do what he wants to do.
And also, you have to look at it from this perspective also. Tom Brady, when he wasn't necessarily forthcoming and helping with the investigation. That's why I think if it's the four games is justified, A, because he didn't help with the investigation, and B, because if he violated the spirit of competition and he directed the code red. So I think four games is justified. If those things come out that they're true, then four games is justified to me.
Like, it's wild because you see, like, the players union, the NFLPA, they have to.
Yeah, they have to defend them.
But have you heard like some of the other players that came out like via Twitter or whatnot? It's as if they're like, oh, he deserves this type of suspension.
I think part of it is jealousy.
Yeah,
because he's been so successful in football.
And it's the Patriots. Yeah, I totally agree. Anyway, down to pregame. Let's go to baseball. Of the Washington Nationals, right fielder Bryce Harper wins his second straight NL Player of the Week award. He's killing it. He's killing it right now. I think last week he was 12 for 23, 9 RBIs, and I believe 3 home runs. Bryce Harper, right?
He
now.
Just hit a home run in the first inning today.
Wow.
So that's against the Yankees.
We're trying to get week one then. Week one, he's starting all over a new week, trying to get NL Player of the Week again. Go ahead.
No, he's on fire. I've stated last year I thought that this team needed a power hitter in the middle of the lineup, and it would transform this lineup. Bryce Harper, you started to see it towards, and specifically in that San Francisco series, the way he stepped up. He provided run support for his pitching. You're seeing what he can do when he's totally healthy. This has been what everyone has predicted. You know, the predictions have come true. You know, the prophecies are right about Bryce Harper. So I just hope he's able to sustain. I know he's not going to be able to sustain this pace, but if he's able to stay healthy and he's able to stay patient at the plate and also realize you don't have to hit the ball 700 yards. You only have to hit it 300, 310, depending on what ballpark you're on. He can have a huge season.
Oh, I think it matters. He's in the zone. He's just locked and ready to go. I predicted that Bryce Harper would be the MVP of the NL. I feel pretty good about myself.
You should.
I should. You know what I mean? One thing about Bryce, we're looking at Bryce Harper now. offensively gifted. He's an offensively gifted baseball player. We saw that before the draft, saw highlights of what he can do hitting the baseball. Will was correct in what he said about him being patient at the plate. That's the most important thing. Young hitters, when they start off, they're real anxious. Even the good ones, they get real anxious. But once you understand the strike zone, once you start to master the strike zone, that's when you become a better hitter. And Bryce Harper right now is on in a whole different level. I mean, his right now, his average, I haven't even counted what happened, what Will was talking about, what happened like now with against the Yankees, but he's hitting 338. I'm sure it's up now, but 338, 15 home runs now. And probably, was it a solo home run?
Solo, yeah.
Yeah, 38 RBIs. So right now, Bryce Harper is in a whole different level. What I like about Bryce Harper is that he's confident. His confidence, and he's confident, he's not scared. He's not scared to tell people what he thinks about himself. He thinks he's supposed to lead this team. He says he believes he's supposed to lead this team. He feels that he's supposed to be one of the best players in baseball when you hear him talk. And he doesn't shy from it. You'll hear the national media say, well, he's a little brash. He shouldn't be saying this. But he sticks to his guns. He's not changing. And to me, that shows that he now knows how good he is. You know, so it's like, obviously, you know, you're talented. You know what I mean? But he now knows that right now, pound for pound, he believes he's the best baseball player, offensively gifted, offensive baseball player. I truly believe that. Even better than like someone like, say, I don't think he's better than Miguel Cabrera, but I feel like that's what he believes. He believes that he's better than Miguel Cabrera. He believes he's better than Mike Trout. He believes that he's the best player in the National League.
He's definitely backing it up thus far.
I Bryce Harper. I mean, if Ray is listening, you know, I told Ray, you know, he thinks I hate on Bryce. You know what I mean? But I'm a believer in Bryce Harper. I think Bryce Harper, again, is one of the better players, period, in baseball. Post this question on our Facebook page and also all over social media. If Bryce Harper continues to play at this level, let's look at his stats, how he's playing now. Who would you pick, Bryce Harper or Mike Trout?
I mean, it's just one season. So, I mean, you know, even though he is younger than Mike Trout and it's only one season, you know, it's a hard decision to make. But me personally, I like the consistency. Greatness is consistency over a period of time. So I still have to go with Trout by a slight edge. But, you know, if Bryce Harper is able to do, you know, maintain this pace over over a 3 or 4 year span, I think you have to revisit this and this conversation and definitely go with Bryce Harper.
I'm going to go with personally. You say you're going Bryce Harper. You talking about
what? No, I said consistency.
Consistency. Don't try.
Great. Yeah. So I'll go with Trout now.
I'm going a different route. And I got tweeted by my man George. And I'll get to George. I'm gonna go with Bryce Harper. And just because what you said earlier, he's younger. I'm going to project. Bryce Harper. I know it's not good to project people, but I'm going to project Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper last season, I believe he had 14 home runs, 15 home runs. He had 13 home runs, I believe, last season, all of last season, injuries and whatnot. When he plays a full season healthy, he's more mature. This kid, to me, is definitely a 40 home run hitter. So I'm going to take his 40 home runs, the way he hustles on the field, the way he hits for home runs, he can go opposite field with power, center field with power, right field with power. He can pull power, excuse me. So when I look at Mike Trout, I look at Bryce Harper, I look at a guy who can do it all. Now, obviously, Mike Trout to me is a better outfielder because he plays center field. That's the prime time position. And also, he is a better baseman than Bryce Harper. But I think Bryce Harper to me, his cannon, he has a cannon of arm. He's a guy who can be a gold glove right fielder. And to me, he's a better offensive hitter to me than Mike Trout. He will be a better offensive hitter than Mike Trout. I know I'm going to have some individuals come out and say, well, Wally, you know, you're projecting. It's not good to project anything. And I always state, like in basketball, I hate projecting people to be something before they, you know, before they begin to show it. But I've been impressed with Bryce Harper. I think last season, the last couple of seasons, he's been humbled to an extent. You heard people, you know, say like, all right, well, you're supposed to be this, you're supposed to be that. And you hear people like Mike Trout. You see people like Mike Trout or hit a home run on this. Nelson Cruz came back to Baltimore, hit a home run. Ain't that something? But you see, he sees people like Mike Trout or Manny Machado getting fame, and he wants that back. And I believe this is the season he's getting it back.
Touche.
But let me read off. Twitter. We got tweeted by my boy George. Let me read this off. My boy George said, only Trout and Miguel Cabrera have Harper cover right now.
I totally agree with that.
You totally agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah, Miguel Cabrera is the best.
I mean, the way he's playing right now, you know what I mean? I'm not going to, you know, say anything. I think if we go just a snapshot, frame, a picture in time right now, you definitely have to
go. Well, I'll say that you'll never have me go against Miguel Cabrera. I will never go against Miguel Cabrera. That is he just hit his 400th home run. He's pretty much in line to get 500, over 500, obviously, maybe 600 plus home runs. Probably the best right-handed hitter we've ever seen, period, in the game. My man Jeremy Gordon, the commish, on our Facebook page, same question, said Trout has done this 3 years. I guess goes back to what Will was talking about, consistency. Harper has been awesome for a month. Trout is also a center fielder who can catch anything. Harper is a right fielder with a big arm. In 3 years, this might change, but for now, there's no argument.
Okay,
that's okay, man. I'm pro Bryce. It's weird because I've been the anti Bryce Harper, but I'm pro Bryce. But anyways, go down to pregame. Let's go to boxing. This is my man Will T's big, you know, his thing. You know, Triple G, Giannotti, Golovkin. I keep trying to mess his name. I like calling him Triple G because it's easy for me.
Yeah, just go with Triple G.
Yeah, let's go with Triple G.
Gennady Golovkin.
Golovkin. Yeah. There you go. Triple G stopped Willie Monroe Jr. in the sixth round. That's Triple G's 33-0. I believe it's 30 knockouts.
Mm-hmm.
And he has 20 consecutive.
20 consecutive knockouts.
Yeah, knockouts. This dude is special,
man. He's special. Listen, you won't hear me say that he isn't special. You know, he's shown that he has boxing acumen. He's shown that he, you know, not only is he a power puncher, but he has good boxing skills. You know, he's able to put together his combination, doesn't tire himself out, cuts the ring off pretty good, can take a punch, pretty good defensively. But once again, he hasn't faced the top contenders at 160. There are still some names out there. You know, you hear him in the press saying that he would drop to 154 to fight Mayweather. And as, you know, as most boxers would say, because we all know that that's the money, the big money fight, you know, if you get in the ring with Floyd Mayweather. But for me, I want to see Triple G.
That's what I want to tell you about Mayweather. But go ahead, that's
no, I want to see Triple G. What I always hear him calling out smaller fighters. You hear him calling out Miguel Cotto, who isn't a natural middleweight, but who holds a middleweight title. You hear him calling out Canelo Alvarez.
Yeah,
Canelo is at 154, but he hasn't made 154 in his last three fights. He's been at 155,
mm-hmm.
which those two would be very big fights. But mm-hmm. to me, if you want to prove that you're a big boy, you want to prove that you're the best. There's a guy at 168 who is undisputed, the number two pound for pound boxer.
Are you talking about?
Andre Ward. Yes.
What are you talking about? Okay.
Go up to one, or even meet him halfway. Say, I'll meet you at 165, 164.
I like that.
Fight Andre Ward. Andre Ward needs a big fight. You need a big fight. Stop calling out the smaller guys. We know that you have a goal to kind of clean out the middleweight division, you know, and there still are some guys out there who I think would be very good opposition for him, such as Peter Quillen and Daniel Jacobs. Thurman's at 147.
147, okay.
So there are definitely guys at 160 that are still at 160 who would be interesting fights
mm-hmm.
for him. But if you're going to continue to call out guys, why not? And you say Floyd, you say you want to fight the best pound for pound. We know 147, you know, Floyd Mayweather barely makes 154.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just makes 154 when he goes up to super welterweight. You want to prove you're big and bad, fight Andre Ward. Plain and simple.
Do you think
fight Andre Ward or fight Carl Froch?
Do you think he's bad? Do you think he would give Floyd competition if he did fight a Floyd?
Yeah, he would give him. I mean, he's naturally a bigger. I can't even say that. Let me retract that statement. I think if he's able to land punches, it would be interesting.
Okay. Do you think he would be able to land punches on Floyd?
That's I know.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think he would. Okay. I don't think he would be able to. Even though he's shown good ring generalship by being able to cut the ring off
mm-hmm.
against fighters, but those are fighters who don't have superb lateral foot movement and don't have great flexibility and bend and the ability to bend at the waist. We saw with Willie Monroe Jr. Willie Monroe Jr., who was boxing, gave him some trouble. Mm-hmm. What is the problem was Willie Monroe Jr. just didn't have enough pop to keep him off of.
Gotcha.
Not saying that I think that Floyd necessarily would have enough pop, but I think if they fought at 154, if he were to go down to 154, it would be a very interesting fight because I think Floyd has enough power to hit him with shot. Floyd has enough speed and just enough power to hit him with clean shots to make him hesitant like he did Canelo, like he did Manny Pacquiao.
So what would you rank Triple G, Triple G pound for pound?
I didn't even put a lot of thought into that because to me, he hasn't done enough to warrant being considered pound. I'm not saying he's not a top 10. He's an exciting fighter.
What
he's
shown. Top five?
No.
Who's your top five?
Right now?
Yeah.
Floyd Mayweather, number one, of course. Andre Ward, number two.
Okay.
Kovalev, number three.
So you got Kovalev over Triple G?
Hell yeah. Right, look at the level of competition that Kovalev has fought.
Okay.
Bernard Hopkins, John Pascal. Mm-hmm. He's fought every number one contender for the title.
All right.
For his belt.
Who's four B?
So that's one, two, three.
What's four?
Number four, Terrence Crawford.
Okay. So Manny Pacquiao's not in your top five anymore?
Not the way he performed in that fight.
Okay.
At number five, I have to go with boy Canelo.
Canelo. So you got Canelo or Triple G?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's just me. I haven't put a lot of thought into it. But if you just asked me,
off the top, yeah, I got you.
I have to put those would be my top five.
So who does Triple G have to fight for you to be to you, you think okay, all right, I can put you on this list and defeat obviously. And I'm not. We don't have to. It doesn't have to be a Floyd. You know what I mean?
I mean, if he would have fight, well, he would fight Cotto at 160. To me, that doesn't do a whole lot because Cotto
that
wasn't
natural. If he beat Cotto?
Cotto's not naturally 160-pound middleweight. Go up, fight Andre Ward.
Andre Ward's the only person. Fight Carl Froch. I think it'd be Froch, though. Carl Froch. I think he can beat Froch. And Froch is very active. Don't get me wrong. He's very active.
He is.
He's very active. Go ahead. But sometimes he don't show up though.
Fighter Andy Lee.
Andy Lee. You don't think it punished Andy Lee though?
I think it would be it's a fight where we would be able to see Triple G's chin.
Okay.
And test his heart.
Got you. Because Andy Lee has heart. That's
yes, he does.
Andy Lee does have heart. All right. Well, let's go to another fight that happened a week before that. Let's go to Kirkland getting knocked the fudge out. By Canelo Alvarez.
Yeah, that was the type of fight that the world wanted to see the week prior, May 5th. the Floyd fight, that's the fight that I wanted to see. I was happy with that fight. But I think that's the type of fight the world wanted to see. They wanted to see a fight. They wanted to see carnage. Yeah. They wanted to see
bodies,
a devastating knockout.
Bodies on the floor.
And you got that with
he got that Debo joint
with Canelo versus James Kirkland.
That was a Debo.
To any of you who think James Kirkland is a pushover, is a chump, a sucker, no. He just came across a better fighter. James Kirkland is a guy who regularly was trained by Ann Wolf, one of the best female fighters of all time.
Yeah, but he didn't separate.
Yeah, but he separated from her for that fight.
Why? He never gave
an explanation.
This is my thing about if I'm James Kirkland, and I'm sorry I cut you off. I'll put you right back on. If I'm James Kirkland, I see that every time like I get to a big fight and I have this lady in my corner, I'm very successful. Like my success rate is up there. But when I decide to steer away from her, that's when I start to get in trouble. I don't know if she pisses him off or whatever, because she's tough. From what I've seen on clips, she's tough. In terms of her training, her training regimen, but he's very successful with her.
He is. I mean, I don't know what the dynamic is and why he separates from her when he does, but I just know that to me, sometimes you got to be able to put those egos aside, and you got to go with what's
hold on, go ahead.
You got to
be look at the bottom. George is like slicing. George loves your Triple G Andre Ward fight.
Yeah, I think it's the it's one of the better fights out there. But I think you got to put your ego aside, and he needs to go back to Ann Wolf and make it work.
Yeah. Cause I don't get it. That's a person that
she gets the best out of him. She gets the
best out of him. You know, when I watched him, I forgot who he fought a couple. I was on HBO. He signed back. Well, he got back with her. It was like a couple years.
Alfredo and Gold.
Yeah.
For 154.
And she like brought back his career. I'm like, dude, you need to go back. I don't get that. But anyway, you already answered my question. We can go to the next topic then. Cause you already answered the last one. Triple G Canelo. And you was like, that may not happen.
I mean, I don't think it. I think it would be an event, but I still think Triple G needs. He doesn't bring anything. He brings a fan. He's creating a fan base, a groundswell out in California. You can see that by the gate. You know, the number of tickets that he sells out in California. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think that he brings that notoriety that most guys are going to be looking for a huge pay-per-view fight.
All right, let's go to the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs real quick. It's not going to be that long.
It's going to be real quick.
After being up 3-1, the Capitals fell to the Rangers.
Eight.
Go ahead, man. 4-3 in game 7. Any questions? Did we see the same old Capitals? I believe we didn't. I'm obviously the same result, but I don't think we've seen the same Capitals. This team played a better team. The New York Rangers team was a better team. It's a team that was the best team. Like, they got the President's Cup. They're the best team in hockey. The Capitals, they fought. I mean, they had their opportunity, obviously, in game 5. That was their chance to knock out the Rangers. They're up 1-0 with like seconds. Well, like a minute left on the clock, and the Rangers scored a goal on a redirection play that went by Hopi. So, again, I don't think this team is the same team. Obviously, like, you could look at it like, okay, well, it was game 7. They threw a couple games, and game 7 they went to overtime with the best team in hockey and almost had an opportunity to win it. So that the old Capitals would have probably got blown out in game 7. This Capitals team competed again against one of the better teams, the best team in hockey in terms of record wise in the regular season.
That's about 30 seconds too long about hockey, but
that was good though. That was good info though.
I'm not going to stay on this topic for very long, just because I'm not a huge hockey fan. I'll watch it, you know, every now and then. But I'll just say this: I don't care if you are viewed as the team that isn't elite or the lesser of two teams when you're up 3-1. In a playoff series, you choked. And you lose 4-3, you choked. Yeah. Plain and simple. It's just that simple. I don't care. You're professionals. You were up 3-1. Even though you were perceived to be the lesser of the two, you choked. You know, I'm not going to say it's the same old Capitals, but you still choked, and you had an opportunity to kind of erase those ghosts of the past and put a new spin, a new view or perspective on this franchise, and you choked.
Well, yeah, you have 3-1. I'll give you that. Yeah, you choked. But again, they played a better team. That's why I looked at it like, okay, we're the same old team. But I know what you're saying. I'm not arguing with that, because, you know, if it was me, and you say, let's say just basketball for as a comparison, my team is up 15. We're going to 16, right? My team's up 15-10, right? 15-10. That's 5 points still, regardless. 15-10. And we lose 16-15. We're going straight 16. We lose in 16-15. We choke.
You choked.
You know what I mean?
And I hear a lot of people debating, no, they didn't choke. We should be happy. We should be proud. No, you were up 3-1. You choked.
You choked. Anyway, let's go down to pregame. The NBA draft lottery starts. It's today.
It's today.
Like, confused for a hot second.
No, I was reading the text.
Okay.
it's today. This is going to be huge for two of the most historic. Well, actually, three of the most. Well, no, two of the most historic.
Knicks and Lakers.
I was thinking Celtics actually sneaked in at the AC. Yeah, this is going to be huge for them. Knicks and Lakers. This could be, if they get
you know, especially for the Lakers, if the Lakers don't get a top five pick, then they have to get that pick up.
Yeah.
The Knicks, this is huge because this could potentially, they can get one of the two, one of the two big men that can potentially, well, to me, they're three elite guys. D'Angelo Russell, Karl Anthony Towns, and Jahlil Okafor.
Russell from overseas, right?
No, Russell's from Ohio State.
Oh, the you know, talking about the kid,
Mundy.
Yeah, Mundy's supposed to be like.
I don't think he he isn't elite.
You think Russell is elite?
I think Russell is a guy that can change the fortune of your franchise.
See, I think there's two elite players that what I've seen. I can't Mundy because only I've heard. I haven't seen enough of Mundy. I think Towns. Mm-hmm. And Okafor. Those are two players I think that can actually change.
I think Russell can change the fortune of your franchise.
We'll see. I just don't see it. I do see a score. When I watched him in Ohio State, I was very impressed. Don't get me wrong. Like, that's the first time I saw him in the tournament, to be honest with you. I watched. I was like, oh, this dude got a slick J. Like, he is slick. He's silky smooth.
I watched him all. I was watching.
But to me, how come he couldn't get Ohio State farther than – like, I feel like players like that are – like, obviously – well, yeah, I think players like that, if you were that – I still use college in this regard. If you're that tough, you can get your team passed to a certain point in the tournament. That's how I gauge individual swing talent, swingman talent.
I mean, that's plausible. You know, I'm not gonna argue with that per se, mm-hmm. but I will say there is evidence of guys who
fit. I know.
You know, who are elite in the NBA and they didn't necessarily take their team that far in the NCAA tournament. But just from what everything I saw, and I saw a large sample size, I think D'Angelo, like I said, I think there are three players that can change the fortune of your franchise. If you're lucky enough to draft any three of them.
But I thought like scouts had I'm just going off of what I've read and seen. I thought scouts had three. And this, like they said, Philadelphia going Mundy, for what I hear. If they can get him. And Philadelphia, yeah, I guess there are three teams. Let's go back to it. I guess there are three teams. Because Philadelphia is a historic. Historically bad, too. They like to. Yeah. We'll talk about, too. They like to tank a season, too.
And I figured out a way to solve this tanking. All right, I sat and thought about it.
Go ahead. All right. Will wants to solve the whole tanking thing. Go ahead.
I thought about this. You know, tanking's been an issue. You know, the reason why. For any of you who know a little bit about the history of the lottery, there's a certain owner who was a real estate mogul who precipitously had his team tank year in and year out.
Precipitously.
Guy's name is Donald Sterling.
Donald Sterling, yeah, of course.
Then David Stern, the commissioner at the time, decided to come up with a system that wouldn't, let's say, reward guys who purposely tank. That's how the draft came about, and we all know who the first player ever selected in the lottery. The lottery era was, that's Patrick Ewing. Ever since then, you know, teams have been trying to, specifically over the past 2 to 3 years, it's gotten worse, you know, with Philadelphia purposely tanking, specifically what they put out on the court the past 2 years. It hasn't even been anywhere close to what you would call a professional team. It's been more of a developmental team. I think I haven't worked out the details, but I think I've come up with a system that helps the NBA stop tanking. Mm-hmm. I think what they should do is once they have been eliminated from the playoffs, from the playoff chase, mm-hmm. at that point, the team starts playing for a point system like they do in NHL with hockey. So if they win, they get maybe a half a point, and that, you know, for every whole point, that helps enhances their chances of bettering themselves in the draft. Mm-hmm. Whereas now you're just rewarding guys for tanking, essentially. So I think, I haven't come up with the fine details of it, but I think when it's been determined you've already fallen out of the playoff race, I think from that point on, your record, there should be a point system. Mm-hmm. I think you should get maybe 0.2 points, 0.25 points mm-hmm. for every win you get from that point on. Mm-hmm. The teams
who at the end of that period from, you know, when it's been determined that they've fallen out of the playoff race. So let's say, you know, there's a team that let's say Philadelphia, like I said, I haven't thought out the details of this. Let's say Philadelphia was out of playoff race with 32 games to play.
Okay.
So from those 32, from that first game when it's been determined they've been out of the playoff race, I think that they should get additional points.
Mm-hmm.
And some way you come up with some type of algorithm or mathematical equation where the teams who continued to win even when they were out of the playoff race get, let's just say, a better opportunity to increase their standing in the lottery than opposed to those teams that continued to lose when they were out of the playoff
race. That's tough, though.
It is, but in the spirit of competition, like I said, I haven't thought about this full blown, but I think in the spirit of competition,
you should think about this more, because I think you're onto something.
Yeah,
sure.
In the spirit of competition, this increases for the fans. This makes the games more competitive all the way up through the last game of the season,
mm-hmm.
and this gives some incentive to those teams that have, you know, that have fallen out of playoff race easily earlier. So I think, you know, like I said, I haven't come up with the fine details of this, but it's just something I just thought about playing around with. And I think that Adam Silver, if anyone's listening, you know, in the NBA office, let me get a meeting with you.
I will tweet Adam Silver.
Silver.
I always want to think Silver.
Yeah, tweet it to him. I think it's something that could be worked out. I think this is something that could be worked out. And I think, like I said, I don't know the fine details of it. I need someone else who's way smarter, who's a computer, you know, who's a computer engineer, who's an engineer or something like that to, you know, come up with the mathematical equations. But it's just an idea.
I think you're on to something. And pick up to Alpha Aminu, who's following us on Twitter.
Oh, that's what's up.
That's exactly. He's another Nigerian. You know how that works? That's what's up, man. Nigerian,
man.
Dude. We moving up.
You guys are taking over.
We are taking over. Will's Nigerian. He doesn't even know it yet. So he has Nigerian features. You got African features.
I don't know about that.
Yes, you do, son. You got African features, man.
Nah, man.
Facial features, man. You know what I'm saying? I was watching Roots, and I was like, yeah. I started picking out people, and I knew they looked like they're
One of those was me.
One of those was you.
Shut up.
No, man, but real talk. Back up to the NBA draft lottery. This is essential to the Knicks and Lakers. We're talking about how sad these organizations have been. I mean, the Knicks and Lakers have been really sad. Sad for like 2 years now. Well, for the Knicks would have been like about 2 years, right? Lakers have been about the same. I'm not going to lie. Am I right? Am I wrong? The Lakers have been bad for like 2 years, right? 2 years.
Lakers,
the White left. And, 2 years. And Knicks have been bad for like 2 years too as well. The Knicks were a lottery. They were a lottery team last year too, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, it's amazing. Like, in my lifetime, you would never see. Obviously, the Lakers suck when Magic had HIV, and we were just terrible for that year. We were terrible for that year. That little run, we were terrible. Actually, the year after, we went to the playoffs with Siddell 3. Then the year after that, we sucked. But we had some bad years till we signed Shaq and company. But the Knicks too. But over my lifetime, Knicks have never really been that bad.
The Knicks haven't sucked as much as they sucked this past year.
Yeah, this has been something special.
Yeah, it's been tough.
Terrible.
It's been real tough. Specifically for me as a Knicks fan. But I still support them. You know, like
you
I said,
support them.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think between the Knicks and the Lakers probably have a better opportunity to sign a big free agent just because it's LA. And when you're a Laker, especially if you're winning, you're the king of LA.
Yes. I mean, Lakers got some good. Go ahead.
No, with the Knicks, you can be a great player and play in New York, and you won't be the king of New York.
That's true.
With the Lakers are LA's,
they are LA's
team. New York, you know, you got the Yankees, you got the Giants, you know. Yep, you got the Jets.
Well, the Jets, you need one of the Jets.
Jets and the Mets are like a stepchild.
They don't count.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're a great Yankee, A-Rod, Derek Jeter, CC Sabathia, you run that town.
A-Rod's Eli, Joe. That was funny.
I mean, no.
I love A-Rod, though, yeah. But that's a joke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Derek Jeter.
Yeah, he was the king of New York.
When they win the championships, yes, absolutely.
Even without.
Yeah, but it's been a long time since the Knicks have won a championship. So, you know, like I said, hopefully in a lottery, they're able to get the number one or number two pick. And they can change their fortunes.
I think you will know the NBA is they have
a fix on.
The fix on if the Lakers are like number one or the Knicks are number one, the Lakers or Knicks are number two.
Yeah.
It comes to that
order. I mean, it would be great for TV
I think it'd be awesome. I think it's something that should happen, but you know something's fishy if that happens, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So, to me the NBA needs it though. Like they need it. They need that to happen though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it'll be great. But I would love for the Lakers to get that, one of the top two picks. Because, again, the Lakers are top two picks. You could pair that with Anthony Randle. Then you have
You mean Julius Randle.
Julius Randle. I'm sorry, Anthony Randle. Julius Randle. Then you have the point guard, Clarkson.
Earl Clarkson.
Clarkson. So you got some good young pieces.
And Swaggy P.
Clarkson.
And Swaggy
Randle
P.
And then you have this young player, too, as well.
Okay. And Kobe.
And you have this young player as well, too. And then you can make some.
Jordan Hill.
I like Jordan Hill. I actually like Jordan Hill. I'm not going to knock Jordan Hill. Okay. I actually like him. But then you have money to play with. And yeah. You can try to bring in, if you can get LaMarcus Aldridge, which you probably won't.
Nah, well.
Looking for San Antonio.
Yeah, right? Nah. Phil Jackson has already stated that he doesn't think that the draft is the way he's going to rebuild this team. He's already said the free agency is the way that he'll most likely rebuild this team.
Funny.
Yeah, he is. You need to get that. Listen, you know, if you can get that one guy that can change the fortune of this franchise, you go with it.
Mm-hmm. Phil Jackson has issues. He thinks he got this Zen thing like too high. He needs to tone that down a little bit. Anyway, it's about time for another commercial break. When we get back from commercial break, we'll be talking about the Wizards' disappointing exit against Atlanta Hawks. John Wall's injury, if he never got hurt, but you never know. It's the Urban Sports thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Every great story needs an epic final chapter. You leave only the strongest characters and make them fight for the glory. A force united by their quest. The stealth bombers. The wizards showing new tricks. Golden boys. The flying angels. The most feared offensive. The unsung heroes. The unstoppable stampede. They are all here. Let the battles begin.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure.
No man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific
all right,
enough.
Once break.
I die, the spirit is revisited.
You can listen to us on the sports on our official this Urban Sports Team website, which is www.walio.podbean.com. Walio spelled W-A-L-E-O. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N.com. We are also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Team. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. You can listen to us on the Sports Crit Podcast Show on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Stiller Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Stiller Fan. Again, our phone lines are open, so call in. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. Okay, let's talk about the Washington Wizards failing against the Atlanta Hawks. It was a good series. It seems like the momentum changed when John Wall went down, though they did compete. But let's just talk about the series, recap the series for a little bit. What you want to say about this series before I give my two cents in?
Not a whole lot. I think that the Wizards put a very spirited and valiant effort up. Bradley Beal played. He stepped it up once again during the playoffs.
Yeah.
But to me, it just has to be that consistent. Like I said, greatness is consistency. Is responding at a high level consistently over a quality over a long span of time. Bradley Beal has shown, you know, the past two playoff years in the playoff that he can play at a certain level. We need him to be more aggressive. We saw the emergence of your favorite guy, Otto Porter.
Automatic Porter. Go ahead, continue.
You know, we saw the emergence of Otto Porter starting to break out. We saw Paul Pierce doing what he was brought to DC to do, which provide that veteran leadership.
I said, game.
Hit big shots. But with those guys, we also saw the decline of a player that, you know, over 2 years has been, what some people, you know, I'll say I thought he's been very important and vital to, Washington's fortune. And that's Nene. Nene and also Gortat. You know, those guys to me didn't, Gortat. Yeah, I'll say Gortat. You know, he showed up, but I'm not going to even criticize.
Go ahead.
I'm not going to say that. I was going to say he didn't earn that $12 million a year.
Nah,
Gortat.
He didn't.
But Nene.
But no one earns that money.
Nene, even though he's not a volume rebounder, he's a guy that the team does rebound better when he's in because he taps a lot of balls
out. Gortat does the same thing, though.
Gortat does the same thing. They're both guys.
I think Gortat does it. It was a better rebounder than Nene, in my opinion.
They both aren't volume rebounders.
Mm.
Nene, you know, in previous seasons has been vital to that offense from the playing at the elbow, initiating the offense, but he's left a lot to be desired, just for me, from a consistency standpoint, defensive and rebounding, and also providing toughness and points in the paint, which is, I think, you know, even though that the rest of the NBA is playing, you know, spread out behind a 3-point line, Washington has to play to their strength, and their strength is those two big guys that should give them a tremendous advantage over most opponents.
You see what happens, to be honest with you, it's successful basketball if you do it correctly. Memphis, even though they lost a good Golden State team, they didn't have enough shooters around those bigs to, you know, to actually make it, you know, to actually win that series, in my opinion, compared when I talk about the Memphis Golden State series. So let's translate that into the Washington Wizards. The Washington Wizards have two bigs who are supposedly two good low post bigs in Gortat and Nene, and two bigs who are capable of shooting from the elbow or shooting from the perimeter. And they didn't take advantage of it, and they played poorly, to be totally honest with you. Will is being very nice. Nene was horrible. Al Horford manned him, punked him, got the rebound over him. And to win that game, there's no way in a game winning situation, I believe that was in game five, that you let a guy pretty much climb over your back. You didn't put a body on him, get a rebound on you. And I don't want to say over the back because that's a foul. It wasn't an over back foul. It was called I'm going to whore you up on this rebound. Yes, I said that. That's what happened.
Whore you up?
Yeah, on this rebound.
I'll say this. If you look at the play, look at that play mm-hmm. in the totality of it.
Yeah.
He did what he was supposed to do from the perspective of he put a body on the man that was closest to him.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So he did that, what he was supposed to do. But he didn't do the second part, which is once you have him boxed out,
exposed to rebound,
you go and get the ball.
Exactly.
He allowed Al Horford to come right over his shoulder. And Al Horford, and, you know, not to make excuses, but Al Horford did have a running start from the 3-point line.
That's true.
Because no one put a body on him. But, you know, when you're 6'11".
When you're 7 foot, basically.
When you're seven foot.
With girth.
Physical, yes.
With girth.
Very physical. I'm not going to say the G word.
Was that disgusting?
No.
What?
No, I'll tell you offline.
All right.
Imposing. No, you know, with physically imposing,
yeah, physically
you're supposed
imposing.
To go and get the ball. You're not, when it's in your hand's supposed to be like vice grips.
Yeah, exactly.
It's supposed to close out, lock on the ball, high elbows.
Yeah.
Throw the ball up in the air when the clock runs out, and then we all celebrate.
I agree with you. That's why, I guess I'm baffled with is I watched Nene in Denver, and he was a rebounder, and he was aggressive at getting the rebounds. This dude here, I don't know his age or whatever, but this one's soft. He's soft. This one's soft. I don't know who this dude is, I know, you know, he's dealt with injuries and what injuries and whatnot, but still, rebounding is effort. You know what I mean? I watched even in game six, a number of times the Wizards were letting balls. No homo. This is reckless. letting basketballs hit the ground without even like attacking it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Seriously, this is game six. This is an elimination game. You go after. The only person I saw going after the basketball, I use basketballs, so I don't want to sound all nasty. Go after basketballs is Otto Porter. And I'm not saying that because I'm a Hoya fan. I'm just saying that's real. Otto Porter drawing with John Wall and Bradley Beal. Only guys. These are guards. Going after rebounds like it's like there is no tomorrow. But I'm watching the bigs just not attacking the basketball. And it's amazing. Nene did that again, game five. I'm watching. I'm like, wow. If you attempted to go after the rebound, Al Horford wouldn't have that type of easy look at the basket. He may have still got the rebound, but he would have been out of position because he would have made contact with you. So, like, to me, the Wizards, I'll be real. The Wizards lost that. They lost the series when they lost game five.
They did. They had the opportunity to win game five. Paul Pierce, it was a big shot, even though, you know, the defender did go at his – he fell down and went, you know, affected his landing. Paul Pierce, you know, still missed a big shot. He still could have –
That's what happened. You know what? That's what happened in game four. But he missed a shot. People don't peep it, but Carroll took a dive at his legs when he shot that three and missed it.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't an accident dive either. If you peep it
– No, it wasn't.
And then he just dove to the floor.
Yeah.
So if you peep it, and then when it really affected his shot because Paul Pierce wasn't trying to roll up on him. Because if he lands on him, you know what happens? He could tear his knee up. I thought that was a dirty play. No one talks about it. I thought it was a dirty play. And I'm not a Wizards fan by any stretch of the imagination. Will can attest to that. I'm not a Wizards fan.
I am a Wizards fan.
Will is. But that I thought that was a dirty play. But again, you know, that's the reason I blame. And also, I'm going to throw this out there too. What was Randy Whitman doing leaving Nene in the game anyway in game six that long?
I don't know. Like, I would have loved to see my guy Chris Humphreys, especially in that situation.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, Chris Humphreys has led feet.
Yeah.
But I still would have, because Chris Humphreys will go after the ball off on the defensive glass.
That's true.
On the offensive glass.
That's true.
I would have loved to see my guy Chris Humphreys in there, but I would have loved to see him play in the series. But. Yeah.
Or be honest, what you know was playing good in that game?
Who?
Seraphin was playing good in that game.
Yeah, Kevin Seraphin. My only problem with Kevin Seraphin is when he gets the ball on offense, it's a black hole. It's not coming back.
Who, Seraphin?
Yes.
Yeah, he's
not. A shot. When Kevin Seraphin gets the ball,
he's not good out of double.
Shot is being put up.
He's not good
at it. It is a black hole. Don't even think about asking, you know, even if he's getting double teamed for get the ball kicked back out if you're a wing.
My man George was like, George, you just tweeted me. Tweeted us, just stated like, what was up Randy Whitman the whole series? I thought Randy Whitman, other than like, I told you, I felt like when it's closing time, Randy Whitman didn't do the job.
Listen, I've been as harsh on Randy Whitman and
Ernie Grunfeld.
And Ernie Grunfeld as anybody throughout the season, specifically the second half of the season with Randy Whitman. I will say this, I think Randy Whitman, he made some adjustments. And you definitely have to be happy with – you're not happy that they lost the series or the way that they lost it. You're definitely happy with the run during the playoffs, especially considering that John Wall was out. He had five non-displaced fractures in his hand.
Go ahead.
So I'll take some pressure off of Randy Whitman. You get a pass. You get to come back. This year.
I am going to – like, and that's the thing. I guess this is what annoys me about this series is that John Wall came back like a soldier. And in game five, in my opinion, put his team on his back. And that team had an opportunity to win the game because of John Wall. Even the game they won in D.C., I thought they looked sloppy winning that game. Obviously, they had that big comeback. But I thought it was sloppy. And I thought it was sloppy in game five. Game four. Game four, I thought it was sloppy. even though Paul Pierce had the opportunity to hit that three to be clutch again and be the truth. But excuse me, Bradley Beal had some interesting things to say. You know, he's pretty salty about this. Obviously, the loss. I would be too. He played very well in the series. Said, you know, that he felt like the Wizards would have won the series 4-1 if John Wall never got hurt. Well, basically said they should have won the series 4-1.
I think they would have won the series too if John Wall didn't get hurt. But if we're a fifth, we'd both be drunk. If my aunt had balls, she
you can say, go, you good?
She'd be my uncle. So you know,
she'd be my uncle. This ninja right here.
Nah, I mean, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, you can't live in the land of what ifs. You got to live with the reality in here and now. The reality is Atlanta moved on and the Wizards were stomped. I'm not going to say stomped, but stopped in the playoffs. It would have definitely been, you know, for the second year in a row. Now, the big question is the pressure's back on Ernie Grunfeld, because what are you going to do now to get this team over the top? You can't stay status quo. Yeah. You pretty much are maxed out with your salary cap. Mm-hmm. Nene is on the hook for one last year, I think, of like, I'm not going to put his money out there, but a very huge contract.
It's on the web anyway.
Yeah, it is. But like I say, I still don't like to put people's money out there.
My salary's on the web too.
Oh, it is?
From federal government. So
okay. Oh, well,
yeah. I got stalkers and everything. Yeah. People can call me out. I'm like, I make this amount of money. No, you don't, ninja. You make this amount.
Yeah, so
I'm not giving y'all my government either. Don't worry about it. But still, it's out there.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where, you know, now you have to add, okay, Otto Porter is starting to take that. Looks like he's taking that next step. We don't know if Paul Pierce is going to be back.
He's talking about retirement.
Yeah, he's talking about retirement. Ken Bradley Beal, do you have the player development staff in place for Bradley Beal to become a better ball handler and create his shot?
I think he has become a better ball handler.
He's become a better ball handler. He's not as assertive.
That's off the pick and roll. That's the main thing.
When, you know, when that spot up jumper isn't there. And B, he doesn't get to the basket at a pace where you'd
want.
Where defense is fair.
Well, I would say this. In the Atlanta series, he was going to the basket when he was getting his shot, when his jump shot wasn't on. I just think it's all on Bradley Beal, to be honest with you. It's all desire, because you see it. I feel like in the postseason, you see it. It's like, okay, man, my team needs me to do this for us to win. So you see the desire. You see the want. But in the regular season, it's like, nah, I'll let John do his thing. Nah, I'll let Paul. I'll let Nene do his thing. I'm not going to say, I'll let Gortat do his thing. But in the postseason, it was like, yeah, this is you and John Wall's team. You even heard when John Wall went down, he was like, it's on me now. You know what I'm saying? So if he can have that same mindset in the regular season, the dude's going to be a star. Because, you know, like you said, if he was consistent in the regular season doing that, he would just imagine how consistent he would be in the postseason. You know what I mean?
True.
He'd probably take it to another level. So true. For me, I think Bradley Beal needs to actually take it, you know, be more consistent, more assertive in the regular season. That will translate more in the regular in the postseason. And we could talk about Bradley Beal really being an all-star, really being one of the better, being one of the top two guards in the NBA. Right now, he's a postseason two guard.
I mean, and realistically, just looking at this thing from the shooting guard perspective, there's one guy that you would think of as elite, an elite too, and that's James Harden. After that, you have Klay Thompson. You have Dwayne Wade isn't the same player that he used to be.
You have
Wesley Matthews is pretty good.
He's good.
Yeah, he's good. Wesley Matthews is pretty good.
I don't even put him in elite.
That's what I'm saying. You have one elite two guard. If I'm Bradley Beal, I could potentially take my game to that level where I can be looked at as one of the elite two guards in the game. So he has a busy summer. He should have a busy summer.
Let me think about it.
In the Eastern Conference, had Jimmy Butler, who just emerged.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler probably had to be one of the better.
Yeah, he's one of the better. Yeah, but he's just emerging as one of the better two guards.
No, that's hard work too.
DeMar DeRozan,
that's a good one.
But I wouldn't put him as elite.
I don't think he's better than Bradley Beal though.
No.
The way Bradley Beal played in the postseason, not the Bradley Beal in the regular season.
Like I said, there's one elite two guard in the league. Well, you know, some people say when Kobe, if he comes back healthy,
Let's see. Let's think about this.
I'm just saying. That's what some people would say.
I'm not giving Kobe Bryant no love in the streets out here. Dang, you know what? You're right. Because Monte Ellis is a two guard. But does that count?
I don't even consider Monte Ellis a two guard, really. I know that he plays the two.
He's a scorer. He ain't nothing else but a scorer.
Yeah, but I wouldn't consider
he's a poor man Ivo.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider
did
him.
Did you see the Iverson special?
Yeah.
I missed it.
Yeah, I did.
It was great.
It was really good.
Dang,
you get a better sense of him as a person.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. You know, that 30 for 30.
Yeah. They talk about Georgetown.
They talk about Georgetown a little bit, but it was more about what makes him tick.
Okay.
Why he was the way he was.
Okay.
So you got a lot of in-depth perspective on people who knew him, and you had clips of him talking. It was really interesting. I suggest that you watch it.
I will watch
it. I recommend it.
I will definitely watch it. I'll find one way to watch it, one way or the other.
It's probably definitely online.
I don't have Showtime. I think it's online. Yeah, I watch it online.
Okay.
I'll find it. When there's a will, there's a way.
Yep.
So I got that from you, man. When there's a will, there's definitely a way, man.
Yes, sir.
So what players do you see? We talked about Bradley Beal. So obviously we expect Bradley Beal to take it to the next level next season. What players do you see taking it to – other players you see taking it to the next level next season, improving on what they
Otto have. Porter, like I said, when I text you during the first round of the playoffs, I said this could possibly be the playoff series where we see Otto Porter become a Kawhi Leonard type of player.
Go ahead. Well, what Otto Porter need to work on, because I see it, I think he has an opportunity to be really to be good. I do, I see it, but he's going to have to work on ball handling. In the off season, he moves well without the ball, which is I think it's an art form that not a lot of players are good at. It's something that you can really get easy buckets. He understands how to move without the ball, especially playing with John Wall. John Wall makes players better. It's a fact. We see it. His shooting has been good. He can continue with that. But his ball handling is going to be his most important thing, and also putting on weight. I think he has to put on some weight, too, at the same time. But he can definitely be a key player, especially if Paul Pierce decides to hang him up. Otto Porter can play this.
If Paul Pierce decides to hang it up, he has to become
a better ball handler,
a better player. Period.
Period. No, point blank. Period. But he's played to me, like you said, the postseason showed us that he can play good in important crunch pressure times, and I think that translates well into a regular season. It gives you confidence if you can perform in the postseason, where everybody's playing at an all time high, no days off, no games off. They're putting – there's so much pressure on you to perform. And let's look at Otto Porter, labeled as a bust. You can play well in the postseason. You're getting minutes. You saw – like, you were getting minutes, more minutes than some of the starters, you know, a lot of the starters, to be honest with you.
Right.
You know, it's going to – it should really translate well into the regular season. You know what I mean? It all depends on how the coaching staff treat him. Like this, like I always mention, when I always talk about Harrison Barnes, it's a prime example. Harrison Barnes fried San Antonio in the postseason, the San Antonio Spurs a couple years ago. Then last year with the Clippers, he fried. But for some strange reason, they decided, like that year we fired San Antonio, the year, and they decided to put him on the bench. The way you treated him made him an average regular season player. But in the postseason, he turned it on because it's the importance. So the same thing applies in this situation. Otto Porter can improve, could be a good player. If he gets the time, I believe he will get the burn. But for me, watching Otto Porter, he definitely has to work on his ball handling. That's gonna be something that he has to take. He has to take as the gospel. I have to work on my ball handling. If I can become a good ball handler and take people on ISO plays, I can really put some damage into this league and show the Wizards that I could be a very, very good ball player.
Yep.
Yeah. So who did you think? Was it Otto Porter? Is the main person you could see?
Otto Porter is the only guy that I could possibly see on that roster, because everyone else is pretty much at the point of their career where they're you can say Kevin Serafin, but Kevin Serafin, he's at the point where he's 5 years into his career. He is pretty much who he is. He's a guy with his back to the basket, has one of the better offensive games, low post games, is a big in the game. But when you give him the ball, it's the black hole. Sure. It's not coming back out.
Yeah, he's going to have to work on his
rebounding and his awareness.
His awareness as a post player. Would you bring Nene back?
I mean, this is the last year of his contract. Now,
I thought he had one more year. I thought he had one more year on the deal.
This This year coming up is the last year of his deal.
He'll be on the contract last. He can come next year though. He'll play next year.
Yeah. So yeah. So you got to bring him back. But
if you're
a good GM,
I would amnesty his ass.
You can't amnesty him because you already used
Andre Gilbert.
Andre Blotch. Andre Blotch. Yeah. But this is where those good GMs turn that expiring contract at the end of the trade deadline to a gold rush for their franchise. It sets them up with players that could potentially pay off for them. Look what Sam Presti did last year at the trade deadline with OKC. He got him Enes Kanter.
Yeah.
And we saw, even though they didn't make the playoffs, Enes Kanter, he played ball. Yeah. They just have to re-sign him.
Yeah, re-sign him, and you'll have KD back with him.
Yep.
He'll be set. My man George is watching. The NBA lottery is going to start soon. But my man George said Russell Westbrook is wearing an old lady flower shirt again at the lottery. I like the clown. These NBA
to
players.
Clown another man's
real talk,
dress.
Can I say something real quick?
What?
Like NBA players, they go too far, man.
They are taking a little bit too far with this fashion thing.
They rich, they can wear whatever they want. It's like, you know what I mean? You remember like you was a
I mean, you don't have to be rich. You can wear whatever you want, period.
But you know what I mean though. They think it's cool. Because they're rich, they wear whatever they want. For real, they need their friend. They used to joan on you religiously, make fun of you religiously. That's okay. Make fun of you religiously. Just like how, like we grew up in Prince George's County. Like people used to make fun of anybody who had like stupid crap. Like you could have Payless shoes. I had Pro Wings. People make fun of me. All right, I had Pro Wings. I had Jordans.
Nothing wrong with that.
I know it wasn't wrong with. I didn't care. I played ball in Pro Wings. All right. So somebody needs to hold Russell Westbrook. Say, hey, little ninja. Hey, you can't be wearing this crap anymore. Because if it was me and that was my boy, I'd be like, what the fudge are you wearing? And it would be worse than that, obviously. But that's what I'm saying. Like these basketball players need to stop doing it. Dwayne Wade was another one. He was going crazy.
Hey, a lot of guys take it too far, but you know, if that's how they choose to express themselves, go for it.
I feel you were absolutely correct. Like you're the man now.
No, I mean go for it.
Go for it.
All right, we're gonna continue to watch this NBA draft while we go to commercial break. When we come back, we'll be talking the rest of the NBA playoffs.
It's the Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Morning, it's me, Magic Johnson here. I won 5 NBA championships and Olympic gold medal. So I'm calling the shots today. Get up out of bed, into school, try hard, do well. School got me to where I am today. So be there every single day and, of course, give it your best shot.
I try and make it next month soon up and fucking shredder she wrote.
How much money is that cost?
Yellow beat, holla at me.
And chewing on some hot. Like I told Tish, I see when I sh. Like you seen him twirl, then he drops it. And we keep them to my block. And Monte keep it on him, he done drop. And Trigger, we be wildin', he some hot. Tones known to get dizzy with them. Try to run down and you could catch it. Running through these checks till I pass out.
Pass out.
Shorty give me neck till I pass out.
Pass out.
I swear to God, all I do is cash out. And if you ain't up, get up on my trap house. I've been selling this like the 5th grade. Really never made no difference with this made. That told me flip them packs and how to maintain. Get that money back and spend it on the same thing.
I'm disappointed. For those of you, you know, we're actually broadcasting live and taping the show, so you know this would be historical, a recollection. But the Knicks fell out of the top 3 and they have the number 4 pick, and the top 3 they're about to announce. Well, possibly
you get Pau Gasol and you get Russell.
Oh, you get money. I really don't want Marcus. I want Marcus.
Hey,
I would love for New York to get Greg Monroe.
Detroit would use that boy wrong.
Yeah, Greg, especially in the triangle offense, Greg Monroe would thrive.
He would be the perfect
post player, perfect fit for the triangle. But anyway, we're back.
No, you can, it's okay. You can talk about the lottery a little bit.
Yeah, we can talk about the lottery. Top three, they haven't announced it yet, but the top three, final three teams are Minnesota Timberwolves, the LA Lakers, and the Philadelphia 76ers. Like I said, if the NBA had instituted my lottery rules, Philadelphia wouldn't necessarily be in the top three at this point.
I'm happy. But
you are, because you're a Lakers fan.
I grew up a Lakers fan.
And if LA gets number one pick, then we definitely know there's a conspiracy.
Yeah, I know. That'd be great. It'd be great. It'd be great for radio usage. Oh man, to be honest with you, because Kobe is about to be on his way out, the future is here now, Lakers fans. We're here. We're in there, baby. Yeah. Okafor. That's what I want. We can get Okafor. We can Okafor team him up with Randall. Oh my, and we just let, and Kobe, his last year here. This could be it. This could be the season. All we need is the number one pick overall. I mean, I'll be excited. You know what I mean? The number one pick.
With Swaggy P?
Swaggy P's not here anymore. He's not going to be here, okay?
Swaggy P.
He's not
going to
be
back,
here.
Man.
He's not going to be here.
Swaggy P.
Towns or Okafor, man. I think Towns is a beast, too. Towns,
I think
Okafor.
Towns is going, because he's a New Yorker. I think Towns is going to force his way to New York.
That's the
I hope he does.
Yeah, I know you're hoping. It's not going to happen.
I hope he
That's
does.
That's your man right there, D'Angelo Russell.
D'Angelo Russell. He can ball. D'Angelo
he gonna
Russell
be a
can ball.
That's going to be a Nick.
Nah,
he'll be in
he gonna somebody's slip. Gonna get him in the top three.
You may get Justin Winslow. It's like I'm playing with you, because there's so many overseas players I don't like though. They brought up
I think the Knicks gonna end up getting Emmanuel Mudiay. I won't be that disappointed in, but
this you are. You know who you really wanted.
Yeah,
Who you really want?
I wanted D'Angelo Russell.
You got. I think you want a good chance to get that dude. I'm dead serious.
I mean, it might happen. Might not. We'll see. You know, the draft is still a couple weeks away, so no use of sweating it right now. Let's get back to the subject at hand, the game that's about to tip off. And within 10 minutes, game one of the Houston Rockets versus the Golden State Warriors for the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah. You want to talk about the series quick?
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, this series, man, I think it's gonna be a laugher, to be honest with you. The Rockets, I believe the Warriors took all four games against the Rockets. None of them were close. You see, the matchups aren't as favorable, especially with what's his face being hurt. What's his face being hurt? I'm having a moment. Beverly. So Steph Curry.
Patrick Beverly.
Yeah, Patrick Beverly.
Well,
yeah, Steph Curry.
I think I have a 76ers. Philadelphia is number three.
Oh, snap.
Now we left.
It's a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy.
Timberwolves and Lakers.
Yeah, let's hope a lottery before we
and
get to it.
Number two is the Lakers.
Oh, it's automatic. We get one or the other. It doesn't matter. We're good.
And Minnesota Timberwolves have the number one
pick
overall
in the draft. And they're gonna go, and they're gonna get a big. It's going to be Towns or Okafor. I think they'll get Towns. And Okafor is coming to L.A. I've already predicted it. Great job. Bosh got boosted. He's like, we got it.
Nah, I think they're going to go with Okafor.
I think they're going to go with Okafor. Nah, stretch because you need room for your slasher and Wiggins. Then Towns could pick and pop.
Well, we'll see.
Okafor, where's Okafor from? It's from Chicago, right?
He's from the Chi.
And what's next from Minnesota, right? Tyrus Jones? Who? He's from Minnesota. Tyrus Jones from Minnesota.
Tyrus Jones. Oh, yeah. They played on the same AAU team.
Yeah, exactly.
I actually think, you know, even though they're missing Patrick Beverly, I think you're gonna start out with Jason Terry in the starting lineup. But if I'm Houston and I'm Kevin McHale,
let's talk about the draft. It's all now. We can talk about the draft. We can get back. It's only the first game.
That's all the
top two picks. Let's see where you think the top three was going to happen. So you think who's going to get? You got Towns going to.
I have. You have Minnesota Okafor. Yeah, taking Okafor.
Okay, that's fine.
Towns going to the LA.
So you have an opportunity to get your man Russell.
Nah, Russell will go number three.
No, the Sixers want Monday. They've been wanting Monday for a while.
I mean, if they, you know,
that's what I'm saying,
we'll
like,
see. We'll see. You know, if D'Angelo Russell goes to the Knicks at number four, I will be an extremely happy man. But I really don't. I think if those two guys are at the same workout and you see them play against each other, me personally, I go with D'Angelo Russell.
Monday, whatever his name is.
I don't want to butcher the young man's name. Same. I think he's a good player. He's a bit more explosive.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at today's NBA, a guy who can not only create a shot for himself, can pull up from the jumper, really pull up for the mid range and the 3-point line, and is exceptional off the pick and roll. And we all know that all 30 teams love to run pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Some pick and roll sets.
Your man said, I think my man said Okafor. They're great. Yeah.
I think you have to go with,
I like it,
with D'Angelo Russell.
It's a good pick. Okafor, that'd be awesome, man. You have two Kentucky dudes. You have Towns and Julius Randle. It'd be awesome, man.
Yeah,
anyway, let's go back to what Will T said. Let's go back to the playoffs, though.
Yeah, Houston Rockets, like I was saying, even though I know that you're going to start out with Jason Terry in that starting lineup, at the three, depending on how the game's going, at the 3 or 4 minute mark, I pull him and I put Corey Brewer in. And I put Corey Brewer, I say, Corey Brewer, your responsibility is to lock down Stephen Curry.
Totally agree.
And if that doesn't work,
I agree.
There's a rookie on the bench named by the name of KJ McDaniels, who's a very, very good
from the Sixers.
Who was traded, yeah, to Houston from the Sixers.
I like somebody better than KJ McDaniels.
Who's a very good defensive player.
I like, what's the name more? I like KJ McDaniels.
Who?
Nick Johnson. I love Nick Johnson, though. I think Nick Johnson can play good defense on Steph Curry, too.
I mean, to me personally, you don't necessarily need, because James Harden is going to handle the ball for 90% of the time.
That's what I was saying.
So you don't necessarily, Jason Terry isn't necessarily a great matchup against Golden State's backcourt just because of his age and his lack of lateral movement, having to chase those two guys off of picks.
Like, for me, I like, I still don't like the matchup. Just in that response, but I was stating this, that Brewer should have started in the series against the Clippers. He should start because James Harden's running your one anyway. He's setting everything up. He has the ball in his hand. It's not like you have a traditional point guard. So you're good with having James Harden run play the one. This series is a whole different beast, though. Stay with Steph Curry. You got Klay. The problem is Klay Thompson. Can you have James Harden running Klay Thompson around off screens all day? So there's a lot of things you have to worry about. This could be if you do that, then Klay Thompson has an opportunity to get loose just because he's running off screens, and you don't want James Harden running every which way, chasing Klay Thompson and getting in foul trouble. So I guess you have to, in a way, play. Or if you're going to play James Harden or Harrison Barnes, that's a guy who will take me to post to try to get you in foul trouble. So this team presents problems every which way, the Golden State Warriors, for this Houston Rockets team.
Yeah, but...
But I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, but Houston has one guy that I don't think anyone on Golden State is able to match up with if he plays to his full potential. That's Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard, of course, yeah.
Dwight Howard, if he's...
Andrew Bogut can give him some...
He can give him some go, but if he's Dwight Howard, the Dwight Howard of Orlando...
Of course.
I mean, 20-16.
He was Dwight Howard. He was productive against the Clippers, too.
And I made the prediction before that series started. In order for them to advance to the next level, to the Western Conference Final, Dwight Howard is going to have to be Dwight Howard of old. And the games that they won, you look at it, Dwight Howard was like 20-16, 20-15 with like three or four blocks. You know, so he has to give that same type of spirited effort in this series.
No, I agree. Dwight Howard has to play he has to take his game to the next level in this series. Has to. He has to be Dwight Howard of Orlando. This team, when James Harden goes for a break and needs a rest, Dwight Howard has to has to be productive when James Harden is on the bench. He has to impose his will. But again, the problem with this series is that Golden State brings bodies. They don't just
Golden State brings bodies. They bring bodies and they bring
and they play good. They play solid defense too.
They play solid defense and they have guys that they are able to interchange within and play in different lineups.
Mm-hmm.
So that creates problems if you don't have the necessarily depth. But one thing that Houston does have is great length at the two and three positions with Corey Brewer. James Harden, you could put Josh Smith at the three. You could potentially go with Terrence Jones. So they have a lot of guys who they can throw in at different spots at the 2-3 and potentially at the 4 that create matchup problems.
But see, this is the problem with the series too as well, because we're sitting here, we're here dissecting this series. Both teams like to run up and down the floor. But Golden State is a team that's better – I feel like there's a better team running up and down the floor because that's their pace. And it is the Rockets' pace as well, but I think Golden State is better at it than the Rockets. So that to me, the Rockets need to would need to slow the game down to be more effective against the Warriors.
I totally agree. You need to use the guy who you're paying like 80 some odd million for.
But isn't it hard to do that when you're up and down running team as well?
I don't, because Dwight Howard is extremely athletic. Mm-hmm. Dwight Howard is a guy who plays above the rim, so he's there for the lob.
Yeah.
If you're able to get good ball movement and get penetration by James Harden and get the defense to collapse.
What I will say, though, is James Harden in the regular season, obviously he gets fouled a lot because he knows how to get fouled. But there's a difference between regular season basketball and postseason basketball. Those fouls you were getting in the regular season, it's going to be hard to get in the postseason because referees tend to let physical play stand out.
No. If I'm James Harden, you scream to the high heavens about you being the MVP. Now you're going against the league's MVP, so you have the chance to prove those wrong who said you weren't the MVP.
Well, to me, I think he's already been proven that who's MVP because of his series against the Clippers and what Steph has done against Memphis to lead his team out of that hole. Compared to what James Harden did, let's be real. That big comeback the Clippers had. Excuse me, the Rockets had it without James Harden. They had him sitting on the bench.
True.
So this series is going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to the series starting tonight. Like Will said, supposed to be starting soon. Relatively.
Yeah, starting soon. Next 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah. So I have the Warriors winning it 4-1.
I have the Warriors winning it 4-2.
4-2. We're still relatively the same thing. Close enough. All right, let's go to the Eastern Conference finals. We're going to have it's the Cleveland Cavs versus the Atlanta Hawks. Obviously, Atlanta Hawks knocked out our local team, the Washington Wizards. The Cleveland Cavs they've advanced by beating a good Chicago Bulls team, a team that many thought they had a good opportunity to beat this team. But again, I look at Cleveland. LeBron is well in this team. Kyrie Irving playing injured. It's going to be tough. It won't be 100%, but you have players. LeBron has role players that are stepping up. So I look at Cleveland. This is going to be an interesting one. What I saw with the Atlanta Hawks in the Wizards series is a team that doesn't play good defense. And I think that in my opinion, if you're going to play that porous of a defense against the Washington Wizards, and you're going to play and the King James is coming to town, this series could be a laugher. In my opinion, because obviously Atlanta has the edge because they get home court advantage. So this, if I had anything, I'm just going to throw it out there right now. If I was going to predict this series, it'd probably be a 4-2 series of Cleveland. But we can preview.
What do you say?
We can preview it some more, but I'm just giving you
I'm not going to give a full blown out preview because, you know, even though it starts tomorrow, you know, we won't be on. I think with the injury to Kyrie Irving and also Kevin Love not being in, this makes this a little bit tighter series than I would have thought it to have been if both of those guys were 100% completely injury free and playing basketball. But I think that, I think this is like a 4-2. I think Atlanta gets two games, squeaks out two games. The one thing that Atlanta has going for them against Cleveland is that Cleveland has traditionally struggled. I'm not going to say traditionally, but during the spurts of the regular season, they struggled with closing out on three-point shooters. Mm-hmm. And Cleveland doesn't – they have – their big men are traditional. They're a traditional big men and Tristan Thompson and
They will fight.
Moskov.
And they will fight.
They will fight, yeah. But they'll have problems against those Atlanta stretch four and fives. Well, pretty much, closing out on threes.
What's his name? Millsap.
With Millsap. That from that aspect, it'll make it a little bit more interesting. But I still think Cleveland takes this. My heart tells me 5.
That's what I want to say. But I feel like just because you were the best team in the league record-wise, you had home court advantage, going 4-2.
Yeah, so that's me also. Yeah. So I agree with you on that aspect.
But back to your point, the thing that I like with Cleveland's bigs, though, like you said, they are traditional. What I do like about Cleveland's bigs are that they're athletic And what I mean, even Mozgov is athletic for a big, for a tall guy. He likes to jump around, get lobs, dunks. He runs out. He's a running big, which I do like about Mozgov. And I think he will, in my opinion, he'll give problems to somebody like a Millsap and Horford. I know Thompson's getting problems, but what they did to the Wizards won't happen against Cleveland. Those bigs go after every board. They don't play like they go.
No, they don't. They fight down on the block.
So they're not like, so you know, if you think you're going to just out hustle like Cleveland's bigs, you're wrong. Like Thompson's going to hustle. We saw that.
Yeah.
And he loves it. It's like watching Dennis Rodman back in the day. Like he enjoys it. He gets a rebound. It's not like he's trying to force it to go back up. He'll swing it back out to Kyrie or LeBron. They reset their offense. So watching this team again, I think Cleveland. We're not going to a full blown preview and try to break down the series for what it is, but this team, I see Cleveland getting to the finals, LeBron James taking the Cavs to the finals, and playing Golden State.
Yep.
That's what it
Cleveland
is.
Cleveland Golden State, which would be a very entertaining NBA championship.
Which so. I could predict it now, but I won't do that anyway.
Yep.
Let's go to other NBA news. The Clippers are after falling to these Houston Rockets.
Oh, not falling, collapsing, choking. Being up 3-1.
Yeah, exactly. Being up 3-1, obviously that was a situation. Obviously that was something that a lot of folks didn't see coming. I was actually just hoping it would go, I was hoping that it would go to game 7, and it did. I actually, when they were getting blown out by 20, I turned my TV off and said, "Oh, this game is over."
I did the same thing as you. Clippers disappointed me. I personally wanted to see Golden State in L.A. in the Western Conference Final. I think that because they have a very interesting rivalry.
They hate each other.
Yeah, so I think that definitely would have been interesting from a fan perspective. But, you know, the Clippers choke. I've stated that I don't think that this team has enough offensively to make it over the hump to get to a championship, meaning the Clippers, just because in today's NBA, you need three guys who can create a shot for themselves and others. You have one guy. Well, you have two guys. And Blake Griffin showed what he can do.
He was no show in the fourth.
Yeah, from a perspective of being able to distribute the ball and creating a shot for himself. And we all know Chris Paul, best point guard in the game, best pure point guard in the game.
He's getting some negative talk though.
He is getting some negative talk, but you know, people are saying, you know, can he take a team over the hump? I still think that he can. I still think he's one of the best, if not the best point guard in the league. But the question of the hour is DeAndre Jordan. He's a free agent. You know, he's going to command a max contract, $100 million, from a guy who, let's be completely honest, who defensively and rebounding perspective is a beast, but offensively leaves a lot to be desired because, A, he isn't able to hit free throws, and B, his low post moves are very limited. A lot of the points he gets are off lobs or putbacks. So if you're Doc Rivers and you're Steve Ballmer, you got to ask yourself this hard question. Do we bring back DeAndre Jordan? And I'll answer the question from my perspective. If I'm the GM, no, I don't. I bring him back. I wouldn't give him $100 million because having DeAndre Jordan isn't going to put this team. We've seen it. He isn't going to be the guy that puts this team over the top. So if you could talk to him and say, hey, we understand, you know, we know that you want to go out there and test your worth, and we're going to allow you to do that. Know that we want you back, but if you're looking for a $100 million contract, we just can't do that because of the confines of the salary cap. Now, maybe he decides to do this, takes a one-year contract, $16 million with a player option for the second, then he waits for the salary cap to inflate, and then he gets his contract, which, you know, if I'm most of the guys and I'm a younger guy, I wait and I do that. But just if I'm looking at this thing holistically, if I'm Doc Rivers or Steve Ballmer, the owner, I don't give DeAndre Jordan a $100 million contract because it's proven that he won't be the piece that takes us over the top and get a championship.
Well, I'll disagree. I think DeAndre Jordan should get this money. There's no bigs in the NBA. All the bigs suck. He's a big that does impact the game for the Clippers. Honestly, he's a bad free throw shooter. We know that. Terrible free throw shooter. But he's a rebounder. He's a shot blocker. He mans that defense. That team is better with DeAndre Jordan on the floor. So, I mean, if I'm valuing his position for that team, he deserves $100 million. There's no bigs in the NBA that can do what he does other than a healthy Dwight Howard. And we haven't seen Dwight Howard healthy in a while. But, you know, you're not the only one who says that on Twitter. My man AJ says, no, he doesn't deserve the money. So I understand. But
Let me be perfectly clear. I will never say no one doesn't or does deserve $100 million.
Oh, yeah, I got you. Okay.
I'm just saying I would not pay him
$100 million. Yeah, I got you. Like, for DeAndre, like, this is my main question about the Clippers is, like, is that what changes do you need to – obviously, this cast of characters that you do have, right? It's not good enough to get you over the top, right? It's just not. The last couple of years, this is what happened. You got the second round. You've been eliminated. What changes do you need to make to put yourself over the top? I agree with you. CP3 to me did was as much as he could. Blake Griffin took his game to the next level, but Blake Griffin also has to show up in the fourth quarter. That's another topic. They have Matt Barnes, JJ Redick choke, but you know JJ Redick has been solid for most of the year. What does this team need to take their team? Do they need an additional player? A player that maybe to slide JJ Redick out of the starting lineup, maybe slide Matt Barnes out of the starting lineup and bring in a player, another swing, maybe a better, an all-star caliber player?
I'm not going to say you need an all-star caliber player. I think, like I've long stated, I think Wilson Chandler would be the perfect fit for this team as the starting three. He's a guy who high energy guy, which they lack. They really lacked energy in that seventh game.
Yeah, they did. I think high energy guy,
very good defensively. Can create his own shot by getting into the paint or you know knocking down a three. Very good defensively. I bring in a guy possibly like a Wilson Chandler. Mm-hmm. And then also at the two position, you need a guy who can create a shot for himself another, and also is a really good defender. I'm trying to think who's out there because, as we stated, there's a lack of elite two guards out there. But a guy who comes to my mind off the break, Wesley Matthews.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Wesley Matthews.
Coming off a big injury, though.
Yep, coming off a big injury. So you might be able to get him on a little bit of a discount. I think if you add those two guys, then you also need to – rethink that backup center position. You won't be able to add DeAndre Jordan if you add those two guys, but you could possibly get a guy who's serviceable at the five who could protect the rim.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could pull off a trade for Anderson Varejao. He's coming off of an injury.
Yeah, but I wouldn't go after players who are injured.
I'm just thinking the guys off the top of my head.
Yeah, Nene. That's a joke.
That's a joke. But it could work. It could work.
Yeah, but I mean, to me, you go after players. I just think you wouldn't come off and go after a player that was injured. I wouldn't even go after what's his face? I wouldn't even go after the player that you referenced.
Wesley Matthews?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I like Wesley Matthews. I think he's a solid ball player. Don't get me wrong. So it's not a knock on Wesley Matthews. But I just wouldn't go after him for this team because this team – Josh Smith putting up work. I wouldn't go after this team – I mean, for this team because this team needs that – they need that piece to do something for real. You know what I mean? So and that's my whole thing. So, yeah, they are doing – so we're watching Golden State Warriors – Houston Rockets game right now. Rockets are up 4-2. It was early, but they do have James Harden on Harrison Barnes. We were just discussing that, so I just wanted to make sure people knew that we know our information. And Dwight Howard is putting in work.
Yep.
And Josh Smith. So it could be an interesting series, though. It could be.
It could be.
It could be. We'll see. We'll see how things happen as the game goes on. When Golden State starts draining threes, that's where I feel like it's, when you watch Golden State, it's like a boxing fight. Once they start hitting threes, how do you hold them off? Can you maintain the flurry or can you good defense or can you make your own? Can you maintain the floor or do you falter down the stretch? But anyway, let's go back to the NBA news. Chris Paul seems like his career he's never made it past the second round. And you hear, does that tarnish his legacy? Because a lot of people
I don't think it does. Mm-hmm. He's played on teams, you know, prior to LA that didn't have a lot of talent. We all know in the NBA talent is supreme. You have to have talent to win. I don't think this tarnishes his legacy. Chris Paul is going to go down as one of the best pound for pound Paul players. He's going to go down in that elite guard, elite players that's under 6 feet. You know, Nate Tiny Archibald, Isaiah Thomas, Allen Iverson.
Chris Paul. He'll go down one of those guys. I don't think this tarnishes his legacy, but you do have to start asking the question. He's getting a little bit older. What do we have to surround him with?
Yeah, I don't blame Chris Paul at all, to be honest with you. I think it's not Chris Paul's fault. I know he showed out in Game 7. What was Eric Bell said? So I think Chris Paul gets a bum rap. My man AJ said, yes, it does tarnish his legacy on our Twitter. Thanks for tweeting us, AJ. Appreciate it. It's not Chris Paul's fault. I had the same debate with an individual I was playing basketball with. And he said, Chris Paul. We're talking about, yeah, it's Chris Paul's fault. He never get past the second round. I was like, one, look at the teams he had in New Orleans. Like, they weren't one of the better teams in the NBA. And secondly, against the Clippers in Game 7, he was the only one that was ready to play. Nobody else. So that wasn't his fault. I don't like Draymond Green. I might be the only one, but I think Draymond Green takes a lot of dumb shots. He's not as good as everybody makes him out to be. He's a hard worker, and good God bless his soul, but that's about it.
He's very important to this team. I question his worth
on other teams,
yeah. But he's worth a lot to this team.
Yeah, I just feel like they should feature Harrison Barnes over Draymond Green. Let's go to Chicago. Chicago Bulls. They're a good team. Let's play some.
Let's start first. Eliminated, and then there's been a lot of discussion on possibly Tom Thibodeau not coming back because of clashes with his personality with ownership. I'll start here. If I'm ownership, there's no way I get rid of Tom Thibodeau.
There you go. Go ahead, man.
Even though he's proven, you know, that he lacks some things to be wanted from a coaching perspective, from an offensive perspective, but Tom Thibodeau's a grinder. His teams are always well prepared. His teams are defensively stout.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, he's one of the better coaches in the NBA. So there's no way I let him go. And Chicago, even though they didn't get over the hump, you just got to go back to the drawing board, and you got to ask, what are we missing? And to me, this is a team that's right there on the cusp. You know, Jimmy Butler is going to be a free agent. I believe, Jimmy Butler's going to be a free agent coming off his first All-Star game appearance. Average 20 points.
Yeah, the Lakers are already getting ready. They would like to give him a max deal out here.
Hey, go for it. I wouldn't give Jimmy Butler a max deal.
He's talking about getting max money. He can get max money.
Yeah, but if someone's willing to pay him, I say go for it.
Yeah. I'm sorry, watching this game. Golden State making that run. Sorry. But yeah, the Bulls definitely, like, the Bulls are talking about letting Thibodeau go. That's stupid to me. Again, the Bulls weren't nothing without Thibodeau. You know, and if you look at Derrick Rose being hurt and some of the injuries they had, and for him to always have this team competing with an injured, with a Derrick Rose that's now on this team, and have this team like as a fourth seed or sometimes a third seed without a Derrick Rose. Like, Thibodeau, he's a great coach. You don't – like, I feel like people take advantage – like, they don't appreciate great coaches when they have them. Like, they think you just fire a good coach. And we'll talk about a situation with Monty Williams. He got fired from New Orleans. Like, he was in the Western Conference. But let me look back to Tibbs. He's a good coach, and Derrick Rose likes him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, some changes have to be made, but the changes is from a personnel perspective. And, you know, that's something for the GM to worry about. So I don't think you get rid of Tom Thibodeau, not by far.
So how about them giving rid? How about them? I was like, how about them? I had a question. Like, I had a good one. Them getting rid of Noah. Because they got to change something about this team. You can't keep the same nucleus. I know you want to.
I don't think getting rid of Joakim Noah is the answer from the standpoint of
Todd Gibson?
Well, no, you have Paul Gasol, but Paul Gasol defensively leaves a lot to be desired, especially from the post. With Joakim Noah, he's a guy who, when healthy and you incorporate him right into the offense, we've seen what you could do. You could run the offense through Joakim Noah.
Mm-hmm.
He gives you a spark. He one of the better post defenders on the block. and his versatility at the wing from initiating the offense with his passing ability. So I don't think getting rid of Joakim Noah is the answer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the answer is for the Bulls. You know, I haven't really studied their personnel like that. But I know the answer isn't getting rid of Joakim Noah, and it isn't getting rid of Tom Thibodeau.
Well, I would. I mean, they got something. They have to change something. But you know, since it seems like they are going to get rid of Tibbs, that's the overall. That's the consensus going on in terms of the rumors. Should they? Who should they? Who would you replace Tibbs with?
I don't know. I really don't know. That's an interesting question. I don't know who the guy that could take this team to the top, over the top. You know, if you get rid of Tibbs, most likely you're still going to have his defensive philosophy implemented. But you need a guy who can do things for you offensively to, you know, take advantage of all that talent that you have. So I really don't know.
We'll see. I'm interested to know what we're gonna do with Tibbs, because if you want to get rid of Tibbs, who's better? And I'm always thinking about former players. You know what I mean? That's why I think, like, former players who played for the Chicago Bulls in that GOAT era. Obviously, you know, Phil Jackson can't take over because he's in New York.
Phil's not taking
over. You know what I mean? So it's interesting. I'm always thinking, like, okay, who's gonna replace Tibbs? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it would be interesting, but
would you go after somebody? I'm gonna talk about him in another segment. Would you go after like a John Calipari?
No.
Derrick Rose, you know what I mean? Bring it back. No. You're lost on Billy Donovan.
Nah, I wouldn't.
Okay. So I'm just saying, I'm just throwing names out there. Like, who would you go after? Anyway, let's go to another team to fire. I mentioned it earlier. Monty Williams is fired by the New Orleans Pelicans. They're meeting with Golden State assistant coach Alvin Gentry. Alvin Gentry. Who do you think would be the best hire for this team?
And first, you have a young superstar and Anthony Davis. So I think I don't think you could go wrong if you went with a younger coach to kind of develop, you know, to build that team around Anthony Davis and build, you know, that relationship with Anthony Davis and the coach and the nucleus of that team. But to me, what's wrong with this team is more of a personnel. Mm-hmm. You have Drew Holiday, Eric Gordon, and Tyreek Evans. Those are three of those three are classic examples of underachievers. Those are guys, you know, even though Eric Gordon has gotten, you know, he's gotten a little bit healthy. Eric Gordon isn't playing to all of his potential. Tyreek Evans isn't playing to all of his potential.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you go with Scott Brooks. He's a guy who's developed young superstars and a young nucleus and is kind of taking a young team up through the ranks to an NBA final and to Western Conference Finals. Maybe he's a guy you look at.
You like Scott Brooks for real?
I'm just throwing out a name.
Who do you like, man? Scott Brooks is horrible.
I who do I like? I think Alvin Gentry would definitely be a step in the right direction, just because we've seen what he's able to do offensively. He was in Phoenix with Mike D'Antoni during the 7 seconds or less era when they used to rush the ball across half court to get up quick shots. We've seen what he's done in Golden State, you know, being one of the assistant coaches and having a hand in building that Golden State offense. So Alvin Gentry would be a good pick. Would be a good pickup for this team if you get the right pieces and build this thing right in New Orleans.
See, I'm having an issue because I actually had this on our Facebook page. Alvin Gentry would be fine, but you know my problem with Alvin Gentry is that his in other landing spots he wasn't that effective as a head coach. He's a guy that obviously because he's done so well as an assistant coach, things happen. I actually would like to see John Calipari take the job. You have two guys that played under him, and you know, and Anthony Davis,
Tyreek Evans.
You know what I mean? If I'm John Calipari, I'm taking this job because I like the individual young talent on this team.
If I'm Tom Benson, the owner of this team, I don't get John Calipari because John Calipari wants like what, $8 million, and he wants the same personnel. He hasn't proven enough to warrant that, in my opinion. He doesn't have the track record as a former NBA coach slash GM to warrant getting $8 million a year. I'm sorry.
You don't like John Calipari?
I'm not saying I don't like him as a coach, but at his asking price, he's probably going to want $8 million and say in personnel, no, I don't like him for that much.
I like. All right, so I put the same question on our Facebook page about who should be a coach for the New Orleans Pelicans. And Jay was like, you said Kevin Ollie would be a better coach?
Like I said, Kevin Ollie won one national championship. Then they followed that up with a less than stellar season. I'm not saying Kevin Ollie isn't a good coach. Maybe a guy who could potentially, even though his team didn't perform that well in the NCAA tournament this year, Fred Hoiberg.
That's a good one.
The coach for Iowa State. That's a guy just because we've seen what he's able to do and coach his team from a perspective of offense. I think Fred Hoiberg would be a pretty good pick for a young team like New Orleans.
I've heard Mark Jackson.
That could potentially work, but you know, you got to be leery of, you know, what some people in Golden State were saying about the ego, my way or the highway. We've seen what he was able to do with the Golden State team, which was, you know, developed him. But Steve Kerr came in and took him over the top.
And also, my boy, George said Tom Thibodeau is rumored. I think that's the one I would take if I had to choose between anybody, because he's a winner. If Chicago decides to fire Thibodeau, he's been rumored to go to New Orleans too. If Chicago decided to fire him, Tibbs would definitely be a guy that I would want.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would want for that team. Teaches defense. Anthony Davis is a great is a really good defender, shot blocker. It'd be a decent fit. So that's another position. That's another coach I would love to see in New Orleans with Anthony Davis. Anyway, the show's we're about to wrap up this show. Real quick, before I wrap the show, I want to talk about something that's near and dear to my heart, man. It's the beef between Jalen Rose and Chris Webber, man. He's in.
Oh, please. I ain't going to waste my time on this.
Yeah, Jalen Rose and Chris Webber, man. Squash the beef. Y'all killing my childhood. I ain't going to lie to you.
Ain't no beef because they ain't fighting each other. Both of them making a good living for themselves.
But you know, they're not friends anymore, man. It blows me.
Friendship's end.
Ain't that the truth? I know, but this is only because of my childhood. I don't really care about this is my childhood.
I really don't care about
it. I want a Fab Five documentary too. I want Chris Webber on it. That's
two grown men arguing. Whatever issues they have, they need to resolve.
Squash the beef. Fab Five too. I want Webber on it.
I thought she was talking about something serious.
No, please. I wasn't serious.
All right, man.
That was serious. What do you mean it's something serious? It's serious enough. Serious. It's a Fab Five. All right,
man.
You ain't grow up watching the Fab Five?
I did, but I thought you were talking.
Oh, like real stuff, real life? Yeah,
real life.
Real
that
life stuff?
I don't care about
that. What's real life stuff? I don't have any real life stuff.
Yeah, I don't have anything real life either.
Chicks rock. That's my real life information stuff for y'all. Chicks rock.
All right, but once again, we want to thank you all for listening to us this week. We're fans just like you. We have a platform. We just want to come here and talk sports amongst two friends. And, you know, once again, appreciate it and thank you.
Thank you. And, again, listen to our show, visit our official Urban Sports Scene website, which is www.waleo.podbeam.com. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook, so just search the Urban Sports Scene. If you want to email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. Thank you all for listening to us. We really appreciate it. It's the Urban Sports Saint.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, homie. To the swag.